fan.
Look at you, hacker. A pathetic creature of meat and bone. Panting and sweating as you run through my corridors. How can you challenge a perfect, immortal machine?
What's great? What's garbage? Everything you need to know about video games. Now, along with Andy Reiner, here's the fan's Paul Charchian.
It's Video Games Weekly. I am Paul Charchian. My co-host is Andy Reiner from Game Informer and GameInformer.com. Hi.
Hello. Good to see you again.
Very excited about the show tonight because it's going to have a bit of a VR bent to it because as of today, we have the second generation of VR is now out. And for a lot of us, there were early adopters. I was an early adopter. There were awesome things about being in VR early, and I've loved it. But it was clear that, you know, there were these hurdles that we had to get through. And if you could solve them, VR could get to the masses. The Oculus Quest is the first really big generational jump in VR. I want to talk to you about that, Reiner.
Sure.
A little after that, I want to get to Mortal Kombat. We talked about it last week, but we'll circle back with for your more official review.
Okay.
Days Gone for the PS4. I want to talk about The Sinking City, the next big Lovecraftian title, and World War Z, and a bunch of other stuff as well. And we're taking calls, and we've got giveaways. Joe, tell people what they can win.
We have three copies of Sony's MLB The Show 19 for the PS4, and then we also have one Xbox One Plantronics Rig 400HX gaming headset.
Awesome. Thanks to our friends at Best Buy for many or all of those games, which is fantastic. And all you have to do is contribute to the show. We'd love a 30-second review, but it doesn't have to be. 1-800-320-5326. All right, so Reiner, tell people what makes the Oculus Quest VR headset a game changer.
So, I don't know if you've ever messed around with a VR headset before, like a Vive or the Oculus Rift, but it's like assembling a little Lego set, right? You got to set up the sensors in your house, figure out how to connect the cables to your computer. There's a bunch of cables.
Yep. I got to have a gaming PC of at least moderate capability.
Yep. You need hardware for it. The Oculus Quest does away with all that. The hardware is built into the headset, meaning you don't need a computer. You don't need a phone. Some VR headsets slide a phone into the front of it.
They're the worst.
And you don't need a console. It's all just built into this unit. And the best thing about it is it's wireless. You are not tethered to anything. You're not stumbling over cables.
Yes.
Even, you know, like if you're setting up a Rift, you put on headphones. You don't have that anymore. It's just, it has audio pumping through the headset at a decent, you know, everybody around you is going to hear it. You can wear a headset if you want to, but it is completely wireless. Everything you need is just in that headset and those two controllers. And once you put it on, within minutes, you can set it up and start playing games. It's that easy.
Yeah, the setup right now on the traditional first generation wired VR, It's a labor. I mean, you know, it took me really actually a day to get all the way to get everything just so and get everything perfect and working just right. And the beauty of this is also, I mean, I'm tethered to my computer, and even though I've got a wireless version of it, I still can't go outside. You could take this thing anywhere. You could take it to the office. You could take it any place you want, and you can now play with the Oculus Quest. You can any place that's got 4 foot by 4 foot, you know, or bigger space, game on for VR.
Yeah, I drew a, so what you do is when you put the headset on, when you put the Quest on, it has through cameras. So you see the real world in kind of a black and white haze, and it's running at 20 frames a second. So you're a little off. You feel a little tipsy as you're seeing your hands and the environment around you. But it tells you, like, The first thing it says is this your floor? And it draws like a grid across your floor.
Yeah, based on what it's seeing through the camera that's mounted in the headset.
Correct. And then you hit yes. And the next thing is draw your play space. So they call it a guardian barrier.
Mm-hmm.
So you just point the controller down at the ground like you have a pen in your hand, and you just start drawing on the floor.
Do I physically walk the boundary,
or can I just stand there
and just aim at it? Okay,
you can aim and draw it.
All right.
You know, 7 feet around you,
yep.
12 feet. I did a big 20 by 20 or a 30 by 30. I don't know how big it was. I did as big as I could make it in my backyard, my dog's bathroom, basically. It's once you complete that circle or the square, whatever you draw, you're ready to play. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, the guardian is up. And if you penetrate that boundary, if you go up to the side of where you drew, it brings up a wireframe. You see it visually as you're playing the game. If you penetrate it, it turns red. It's usually blue. And it's telling you, you're going through your guardian barrier.
Right.
And then if you keep going through it, it turns on the through cameras to show you the real world.
Yeah, like it stops the game and goes, ta-da, look where you are.
You're going to punch out grandpa or knock yes. over a lamp.
Or walk off a cliff.
Exactly.
And by the way, playing
you
outside.
Could now without
playing
the...
outside to me is just, I'm blown away at the notion that you could play VR outside in the yard.
Yeah.
You could have a 20 by, we don't know, do we know the maximum boundary size?
I want to say it's about 20 by 20 what I drew.
20 by 20 is big enough, and I can't stress this enough. Like when I'm playing Skyrim in VR, I have a 10 by 10 foot space. It's enough so that I can walk parts of it. I can walk, you know, in a room, I can walk over to a chest and I can kneel, and you know, then I can, you know, stand up and walk to the other side of the room. When we get talking about 20 by 20 or 30 by 30 or 40 by 40, I can walk, you know, huge swaths of Skyrim or whatever game I'm playing.
Dive roll.
Total
do whatever
game
you want.
Changer.
Yeah.
When I could take this outside, take it to a park or a soccer field.
Oh, you're going to look so cool out there.
I don't care. I won't see them.
Playing your virtual soccer is people are playing real soccer.
I would do that. To be clear, I would do that. Okay. So tell me about the controllers that come with the Oculus Quest.
So it has the same touch controllers that come with the, I guess they've been using with the Rift.
Yeah.
And basically, they're two separate kind of little handholds devices that have these big rings on them.
Mm-hmm.
The big difference is they move the rings from facing downward on the pre-existing ones to upward on these controllers. And that's so the sensors on the headset
can see it.
Can see it as you're moving around.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before you had room scale, you had sensors all across your room, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that just helps it. I had sometimes where it would lose connection, but the second I moved that controller back up into view, it was back. It was like a nanosecond of losing it. So I didn't like lose a round of Beat Saber or anything like that.
Right, right.
And the nice thing, since we had a previous generation of VR already, there's a lot of great games out there. So this unit, when it launches on May 21st, will have over 50 games and apps available. A lot of them, it's kind of like a greatest hits of VR.
Yeah. Most of the stuff you'd want to play is going to be available for the Oculus Rift.
Exactly.
You'll be buying it with a built-in store that's in the headset.
Yes.
I mean, I can't use Steam, which is going to be a bummer.
Right.
But I have to use the Oculus Store. But if history is any indication, Oculus support has been almost ubiquitous.
Right.
So almost everything you want to play will ultimately be out for the Oculus Quest, I believe.
Yeah, and the Darth Vader game that's coming, that'll be out on launch day.
Mm.
And, I mean, seriously, there's like 20 games right out of the gates that you should play if you haven't already in VR.
Oh, that's amazing. So is, I bet what isn't? I think, is Bethesda still mad at Oculus and,
sued each other
for a bajillion dollars? So
yeah,
Skyrim's the one game that you're not probably ever going to get on Oculus.
Right.
And that's, it's a loss, but it's not insurmountable. All right, so now we've talked about how this Oculus is a total game changer. I don't have to have a PC. There's no wire attached, so I'm not bonking into a wire. I'm not tethered to anything. I can take it wherever I want. I can take it outside. I can take it to a friend's house. I can take this place, to school, wherever. How much does it cost?
So the base unit is going to be $399, and I believe that's 64 gigabits of storage. And then there is another a little bit more high-end model of just giving you more
storage,
128 gigabits for $499. So basically, it is the console experience for VR.
Yes.
It's plug and play, or I guess just wear and play, and it's about the same price point.
And so let me be clear about this. If you're not up on your VR pricing, $399 is nothing. It's shockingly cheap. By comparison, also today,
an hour beforehand, before the review embargo lifted, Valve came forward and announced
Valve, the makers of Steam, they announced their headset and all the details and all the pricing on it. Their forthcoming headset is wired, still has to have tracking stations, it still has to have a PC, and it is $1,000. So to get this Oculus Quest for $399 feels ridiculously cheap. Is it going to be as powerful as the PC? No.
No.
Is it going to look quite as good? No. But that trade-off, to me, is a pretty easy one to make for almost everybody listening.
Yeah, if you haven't experienced VR yet, I would say Oculus Quest is the way to go just to experience it. I have a couple concerns. One is, since it is kind of that console experience, you can't upgrade the hardware in the headset.
Right.
How long will that still be relevant and supported? Right. If enough people buy it, they're going to obviously keep making games for it, right?
Sure.
But VR right now is in its infancy, and they keep iterating and evolving this medium very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've already had four Oculus product.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Or there's two launching on the same day, along with the Quest, is the Rift S, which is just kind of a slightly improved version of the wired version.
Yeah.
But what's next? Is the next Quest upgrade next year? Is it going to be more like an Apple iPhone?
No. I think this will be... I think it's going to be not that dissimilar from, you know, if you buy an Xbox... If I buy an Xbox X or I buy a PS4, you know, I'm getting, you know, a generation of use out of it. I think at the end of the day, the Oculus Quest is going to be like that. We will get a generation of use out of it. And again, almost anybody who's making games is going to make VR game's going to make it work. And man, have the VR games gotten better. Holy cow.
Oh, yeah.
The VR games that have come out in the last 6 months, you can really see the huge strides that are being made in VR games. And, you know, we're finally starting to get, you know, bigger publishers, bigger titles, conversions of AAA titles that are coming for VR. The space has gotten so much more interesting.
And we've had, you know, at Game Informer, every headset come through, and never before have I seen the staff unanimously just be like, within 5 minutes of wearing this one, like, this is it.
This is the thing.
This is the game changer.
Yep. Now, the closest thing you can get to the $399 Oculus is you can buy a Vive setup, which is about... which is, I think, either $400 or $500. And then you have to go get the wireless adapter.
And a computer, though.
And the computer. And, you know, if you had to do that from scratch, you're in for $2,000. Wireless, but I can't stress enough how much wireless is a game changer in VR, and not having the cord experience and bonking into the cord, because it breaks the illusion to such a great degree.
Now, when the PS5 is officially announced, or whatever Sony ends up calling it, I have a feeling...
It's going to be called PS5.
I have a feeling we're going to see a headset very similar to this one for that system. Sony's, you know, their brand, PSVR.
You think it won't use with all of the crazy horsepower in the PS5, you really think it's going to be wireless and have its own processing, and it won't have any dependencies on the PS5?
Yeah, I think...
Really?
I think that's the way they go. I think they bring that library forward and do that. I mean,
you might
be right that they try to sync it up with the PS5.
I think they will.
But man, this is, once you go this way, once you experience
it's hard
it
to
without
go back.
The wire,
it's hard to go backwards.
It is, like you said, the new generation. This, anything else feels, even if it is the most state-of-the-art.
Yep. Which is the index. This new Steam headset is state-of-the-art, and it's got a bunch of new stuff, but it's wired, and it's $1,000.
Yep. That just feels old school.
It does. It feels old school.
This is what we want. This is what we always wanted. Like, the second you wear a headset and you're like, I love it, I think VR is the future of games, but the big asterisk on it is, this cable stinks.
Yeah.
You're always fussing with it. It's pulling you around.
Yep. Oh, all right. We've got a caller who wants to chime in on this. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
I was just wondering, is there any way you can actually try this thing out yet?
You know, I think there is. My understanding is that Best Buy, who was nice enough to give us our giveaways today, has got an Oculus display, but I don't know if you can try it out or not, but I know they've got a display, an Oculus display, because I've seen pictures of the display. I just don't know if there's a demo unit or not, but keep this in mind. At Best Buy, you can return anything.
Yeah.
That's true.
You know, go try it in your house. So, you know, if you're interested, if $400 isn't a killer for you, I would just say you go try it in your home and see if you love it. If you don't, bring it back.
Yeah, call the store, see if they have a setup. And like I said, within minutes, that's all the time commitment you need to just put this on. As soon as that screen comes to life, you draw your grid and away you go.
Wow.
So you'll know immediately what you think of it.
All right. Sweet.
I'll throw you
in. And I'd also like to thank David Former for helping me out years ago.
Oh, how did we help you?
This was some Final Fantasy stuff.
Okay.
All right.
before the internet, you know.
Sure.
Oh, well, good. That's
tips
great.
And tricks, strategy, maybe.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tom. I'll put you on hold. You can pick up one of our giveaways tonight. Speaking of Final Fantasy, Final Fantasy 12 coming, I think it releases on the Switch now?
The Zodiac
soon?
Age, yeah.
Yeah. I've lost track of them all. Honestly, they've started to blend, and they keep releasing new ones and re-releasing old ones, and which one was Zodiac Age again? I didn't play it.
That was more of, not open world, but it had kind of MMO combat mechanics to it.
Okay.
Where everything's moving in real time, you can position your characters, which at the time was kind of crazy for Final Fantasy.
It was never
turn-based.
That way. Right, yeah.
But that was a good game. That it focused on the judges as kind of the opposition. It had a little bit more of a realistic Renaissance tone to it. That was a good game.
Okay.
So it's worth your time on Switch. If you're trying to get through all the Final Fantasies, definitely play this one.
We've got another guy who wants to talk about the Oculus and Quest. Hi, Jake.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, thank you.
Hey, yeah. So I'm actually in the market for a new Oculus because I experienced this thing called OLED rot, where the screen in one of the right eyelid was broken, and I was curious what would you consider for someone who's had a tethered VR set to one of the higher end versions. Would you consider switch over to the Quest, or would you switch?
Do you have like the light stations, and you've already got the controller and everything, so you don't
I have everything except the display is actually broken itself.
Yeah, I think at that point I would look at the Oculus Rift S because you get a state of the art headset. I think it's up to you to decide how much you care about the wired part, and you know you do gain the fact that your PC may be a lot more powerful than the graphics processing that comes in the Oculus Quest.
Mm-hmm. And I can't understate just how awesome it is to be able to play anywhere.
Yeah,
I mean,
there's
seriously,
that's such a big thing.
Yeah, so Jake, that's been a big selling point for me. So I was.
Would you travel with it? I mean, you know, would you take it to friend's house? Would you take it? Would you use it?
Oh yeah, I would for sure take it.
Well, then that's that. Then get the Oculus Quest.
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of underselling. $400 is a lot of money, but I mean,
but in the VR space, it's not.
Yeah, an experience like this, it is not.
And allow me to quote. I'm going to throw you on hold, Jake. You can pick up one of our giveaways tonight. Allow me to quote Corey Cove after he went through my my VR setup, right? Which is it's the Vive, and you know it's a nice setup, but it's you get in it and you play it, and he walked out going, if I didn't know better and you'd have told me that this setup costs $1 million, I'd be like, yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, you just, until you experience this stuff, it's staggering that you could, it's so amazing and so immersive and it fools you so completely. $400 is nothing compared to the experience.
Yeah, I've seen people's reactions that you'd think it was humankind discovering fire for the first time.
It really is.
I mean, they're losing their minds over what's happening in front of them.
Half of the fun of owning VR is putting people into it for the first time.
Yep.
And watching their reactions to it as they just freak the bleep out. Oh, God, it's the best. When we come back, Mortal Kombat 11, Days Gone, The Sinking City, and plenty more. It's Video Games Weekly on The Fan.
This is Video Games Weekly on The Fan.
The Fan.
show. It's Video Games Weekly on the Fan. Paul Charchian and Ryan are with you. I want to transition from Oculus Quest and VR to more or less back to video games. But we've got one caller, Christian, who's been nice enough to hold for quite a while. I think it says Christian. Hi. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for having me.
No problem.
Well, this morning, as most of the internet knows, the Sonic the Hedgehog trailer finally debuted for Better or Worse.
What did you... This is your time... Now, for people who don't know, you're talking about the movie, and it's a live-action movie with a CGI version of Sonic.
Yeah, it's set in real-life America, and it's a CGI, like, realistic, uncanny valley Sonic the Hedgehog with human teeth.
Yeah.
And I don't think the... Like, just... I'd recommend anyone watch a trailer just to see it. But I think no matter what we think of the actual film, Jim Carrey, his performance as Eggman, he needs an Oscar for he is giving it his all for it.
he's definitely selling it if you've seen the trailer. Ryan, have you seen this?
It looks awful.
It looks so bad.
So when I heard they were making a Sonic the Hedgehog movie, I assumed it would all be CG.
Animated.
Illumination or DreamWorks making this, and because he lives in his own world, Green Hill Zone. We've all played it on Genesis and every system ever made, right? But no, it's in America, and he's come to save our planet, this blue hedgehog from Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
And it looks like a buddy cop movie. He's with... palling around with a cop? I don't know what they're thinking. It doesn't look anything like Sonic the Hedgehog that we know and love from games. It looks like they just inserted this character into a random plot they had.
It looks like
do we have a license?
It looks like a Transformers movie to me, but yes, I agree.
Exactly.
As if they just drew in, like they'd filmed this really bad movie, and they're like, wait, let's not release it. Instead, let's animate in Sonic into the movie.
That's what it looked like to me, too.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe that's it. Christian, thank you for the call tonight. I appreciate it.
Oh, put him on hold, too. Yeah.
Yeah. We've still got giveaways, so I love it. I can't overstate, for those of us old enough to remember the original Sonic, what that did to legitimize the Sega Genesis. The Sega Genesis had middling traction. Everybody knew it was more powerful than, at the time, there was only the 8-bit Nintendo that was available. You knew it was more powerful, but there weren't games that really showed it.
Remember the box for the original one had Altered Beast on it? Just that werewolf in the with the fire behind him?
It's of course.
What are you trying to sell me?
When Sonic, the original Sonic the Hedgehog came out for the Genesis, it was the first game that made you go, oh my God, this is a total leap forward, a true next generation experience.
You remember what it was called? Blast processing.
No, that was what it was called?
Yeah, everybody's like, blast processing. Look how fast that character runs.
Oh, yeah. The technology behind it.
Yep.
Yes, I thought you meant the name of the game.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yep. Mortal Kombat 11, we touched on it last week, Reiner. I just want to give you a chance. You hadn't done the full review yet. At that time, now you have. You settled on a score of 8 out of 10. Is there anything particularly different than what we discussed last week?
Yeah, a couple things. So let's just give some context for the last couple Mortal Kombat games. So Mortal Kombat in 2014 was rebooted with just a self-titled Mortal Kombat game.
Yeah.
I gave that a 9.5 out of 10. It went back to the 2D fighting mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
Was very much kind of a throwback to yesteryear, but was just beautiful in next-gen kind of graphics. The next game that came out, Brian Shea reviewed that for Game Informer. He gave it a 9.25. A little bit, more of the same. Maybe not as inspired as the one that came before it. And then now, last week, Mortal Kombat 11 came out, and we gave that one an 8 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that really hits this one is microtransactions.
Yeah.
And loot mishandling, mm-hmm. and making you feel like you got to jump through unnecessary hoops to get what you want. And they said they're going to try to address this kind of stuff. But the thing I keep hearing from game developers that's driving me nuts is a game launches, the community is an uproar.
Yes.
They go on Twitch and they're like, we hear you. We agree with you. And it's like, you've been working
on this. You knew this was coming.
For 2 years.
Yes.
You released it this way thinking, let's see if they're okay with this.
Yes.
You're lying to the community right there. The second your game's released.
Yes.
Just be like, we messed up. We're going to try to fix it to make you happy. That should be your messaging.
How about the messaging should be, our corporate overlords made us do this. We right. told them you'd hate it. You do hate it. And now that the corporate overlords are looking at all of the negative press and the low review scores, now we, the programmers and the developers and the game designers, we're going to go back and try to strip out all their BS that they forced us to jam into this game.
Yep. That's the truth. But no, instead it's, we hear you. That just makes me angry.
That's the worst. They make you buy. Now, they would say it's not pay to win, which is mostly true.
Correct.
It's not pay to win. But if you want to experience the full breadth of the game, it's either super grindy or you got to pay.
What's Mortal Kombat known for?
Fatalities.
Correct. Guess what is hidden in these chests that are in a section of the game called the Crypt, mm-hmm. which you have to use various in-game currencies. There's like 5 currencies in the game
yeah.
to unlock. These chests have fatalities and the brutalities in them. And it's like, those are core elements. Those are the right. limbs of Mortal Kombat.
Yes, that you put behind away. A paywall.
But there are thousands of unlocks. Like, for one character alone, over 60 skins, and then little augments that you could put on those skins. The odds of you getting what you want,
yeah,
infinitesimal. Like, it's just not going to happen. So that's infuriating. Like, there's a great game there. Mm-hmm. Like, the fighting is mm-hmm. outstanding. The story mode, the single-player story mode, which you can finish in one sitting.
Yeah.
Really fun in that kind of big, bombastic, Michael Bay type of way. It's silly, but it's actually like a fun ride all the way through. But once you go outside of that, look out.
Get ready to pay again. You already bought the game. Get ready to pay again. Mortal Kombat 11, you mentioned last week you couldn't put the review up early as you would have liked to because you wanted to make sure the online play was stable.
Yep.
And does that look good?
It's your mileage is going to vary based on your opponent. So okay. if you have a rock solid connection and they don't, you're going to feel the chop.
Yep.
There's no way to search for players with similar connections to you.
That's
or good
too bad. Yeah.
I hope they
Lots
have that.
Of them have that.
So I had some matches that were awesome and other ones that were like almost right. unplayable.
PC modders, by the way, have already created patches that allow the game to run in widescreen, which is an increasing demand nice. For, you know, widescreen monitors have become yeah. so inexpensive now that they're becoming ubiquitous for PC gamers. I don't know why games aren't shipping with it. And the modders have also got 60 FPS during cutscenes. They've done some work with it already, which is great. Going back to VR for just a second. Kellen, hello.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
I've got a PS3 that I bought 10 years ago. I haven't played video games in maybe 5 years because I got little kids. And
yeah.
I heard the Oculus talk and wondering about VR. If I'm getting back into it, what's the best route to start?
So wait for this VR Quest to come out in a month.
Yeah.
This is the absolute best starting point. It's cheap, and it's got everything in it that you need, and it doesn't sound like you've got a gaming PC sitting at home anyway. So this is for sure the way to go. And how old are your kids now, Kellen?
Well, young enough that I still find 6 DVDs in the PS3 and got to take the tweezers out to buy them.
Wow.
Jeez. Maybe a little too young for VR, if that's the case.
Yeah. Go up on the shelf and be away or something.
There. All right. But
how much am I going to spend on getting set up?
$399.
That's it? It's just a headset and that's it?
It's the headset and 2 controllers, and that's all you need. And that's part of the beauty of this, is that's all you need are the headset and the 2 controllers. And it's got what we call room scale, so you can walk around in virtual reality. This is the huge breakthrough that the Oculus Quest gives.
Okay. So that and then a locking cabinet or something.
Yeah, that's right. I think you need that too. Thank you, Kellen. I'm going to throw you on hold. Terrible connection.
Yeah, was he underwater? Like in a submarine?
That was not good. Andy, hello.
Hi there, Paul. How's it going?
Good. Thank you.
Hey, I just wanted to call in to see if you guys may be interested. I was just listening in. The company AMD just released just had their Q1 phone call.
Okay.
I was listening in on it, and the CEO, Lisa Su, gave a little bit more info about the PS5 that I thought might be interesting to you guys.
Pass it along.
So she did just confirm that it will be using, the PS5 will be using their Navi processor that I think you guys have been talking about.
We have.
The past couple weeks.
Yeah.
And
that's great.
Which is really exciting because it's a really good processor, but also there were fears that it would be super expensive, which means that the PS5 would be incredibly expensive too.
Yeah.
She did say that the new Navis that they're releasing in Q3 will be less expensive than their current most expensive GPU that they have out there, which I think is like $700.
It's $700. That's right. That processor right now to buy is $700.
Yeah, and I'm sure if Sony is they're doing a bulk order with AMD, I'm sure it's not going to be like whatever they get for their GPUs is going to be much less expensive
for
than
sure.
whatever a consumer would get. But just hearing that the Navi that's going to be released in Q3 is going to be less expensive than their current offering, that gives me a lot of hope for the PS5 just not being obscenely expensive.
Yeah. Andy, you know, Ryan and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago when the system specs were officially talked about in Wired Magazine. Sony learned their lesson with the PS3 that they can't go to market on at that time, $799 price point.
And
right. It devastated the sales for the PS3.
Yeah.
I got to believe, we think that they're going to launch it at something closer to
$399. If it's anything more than 500, I can't imagine that
people won't
do
it. Yeah.
Well, one thing we haven't considered is how consoles might be sold in the future too. It could be very much like going to AT&T to get your iPhone.
Yeah. Maybe you're going to lease it.
I mean, maybe you're paying for it over the span of 2 years or a year.
Well, I hope not, because that tells, if they're doing that, that means it's super expensive. The
right.
reason that we lease out our iPhones is because they're $1,000 for an iPhone now.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's a chance that could become the norm for consoles as well. That's been thrown around in the past. It just hasn't come to fruition yet.
Yeah, and the whole idea of streaming games instead of purchasing them digitally on yours, like the infrastructure for internet just has to be, that's like not even on Sony's fault. Like, you just need to wait for infrastructure to catch up in order to have that be a viable experience, I think, too. But if that eventually does happen, I could see that the cost of a console just plummeting.
Yeah.
Maybe. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I have a feeling physical media is going to be coming back in a big way. I could be completely wrong about this.
Why?
But
the only person who thinks that. Why do you think?
The sizes of these games
are
going to be ridiculous. Like, you're looking at right now 100 gig downloads for a game and patches of like 15 gigs.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, that's true. And another thing that I think may be good for PS5 is they're switching to solid state instead of the HSD, but the prices of solid state drives are really decreasing now.
Oh, by a lot, for sure.
Yeah, you can get like a 1 terabyte SSD for like $100. So hopefully PS5, they don't make the same mistakes like you said with the PS3, because I'm looking forward
Oh yeah, it'll be. They've learned valuable lessons at Sony. They'll get this right. I'm confident. Andy, I'm going to throw you on hold. We're up against a break.
Yeah, one thing you got to look at is the infrastructure for data caps on your internet providers, too. That's going to be a big player in how things shape out in the future, too.
Yeah, I'd like to think I'm not going to go over my data cap just downloading games for one-time downloads when I buy them.
So 1 terabyte for Comcast is kind of their
standard? I don't even know if you can buy more than that.
But if you have games that are running at 4K... Mm-hmm. Native, like that's maybe the base, or 8K they're talking about.
Wow.
Those texture sizes are going to be ridiculous, and it's going to be, you're going to be downloading 300, 400 gig games.
Yeah. Well, I'll just, you know, but my internet will be so much faster than with the fiber that I won't have in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
All right. We'll take a break. Final segment coming up. More Video Games Weekly on The Fan.
This is Video Games Weekly on The Fan.
The Fan.
Welcome back to Video Games Weekly on The Fan. Paul Charchi and Reiner with you. We've talked Mortal Kombat, talked to VR and the Oculus Quest and all of our excitement for that. Days Gone came out last Friday. This is a long time in development PlayStation 4 exclusive published by Sony. We talked about some of our expectations going in. Now the full review is out. It only earned a 7.75 out of 10, which is a really very middle-of-the-road score by your standards.
It's okay.
It's okay.
C-plus range, right?
Right.
If you're going on the academic scale.
On the academic scale. Let's use the academic scale. This is your zombie apocalypse set in the Pacific Northwest. Resources are scarce. You're a drifter named Deacon on a motorcycle going from place to place. You're trying to get reunited with your wife. It's an open world game. But Kato, who did your review, complains that really the storyline ends up being very linear and the side quests are not very compelling. And so the game and they're not very rewarding when you do them. So you really are on a very linear path.
Yeah, and a lot of it is resource management. And there's something about this game that I like. Like, as I was playing it, I was like, man, it just has its own vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And that works against it in times. But at the same time, there's things about it that are unique to the experience that Days Gone gives you, right?
Like, yeah.
So I kind of latched onto that. Like, you go into a house, there's kind of these zombie creatures around, and you're using stealth like, almost like you're playing Last of Us, and you're going in and you're gathering things that you can craft with.
Yeah.
And just trying not to make any sound as you go through it. And then the next thing you know is, well, to get away, I got to get on my bike, which is the loudest thing in the world. You get on that, and all of a sudden you have a swarm that looks like a tidal wave of these zombies, almost like ants crawling over each other coming after you. It's interesting, though, because you are this guy named Deacon, and you're from a biker gang that was thriving before this apocalyptic event kind of took over the world and there's these creatures running around now. But you still have that mentality and you're still part of a group, right? You're with some friends that were in the same gang as you.
Mm-hmm.
So you still are kind of these bikers at the end of the world, right? Like it's kind of cool in that capacity.
Mm. Okay.
And they set up, they have a great MacGuffin, thing you're going after at the beginning of the game where your wife is she's hurt and they get her on a chopper as you know this apocalypse is unfolding and you wave goodbye to her and then it's like 3 years later.
Wow.
And then you're like, okay, well,
yep.
What comes next? So you latch onto that. So even though it, like Kato said, the narrative is linear, you want to see where it goes just from that setup at the beginning.
You mentioned it's got hordes of zombies, and so a lot of what makes this a little bit different, other than World War Z, which also just came out and got a higher score, but Days Gone has had so much buzz, I wanted to talk more about it and want to talk about it first. Dealing with the horde of zombies and trying to figure out how do I take out 500 zombies, right? You know, can I build a choke point? Can I blow them up? What am I going to use? What is the game giving me to use to overcome 500 zombies? Because I'm not going to shoot them all, not going to kick them all. You know, how do I deal with that?
Yeah, a lot of times you're not going to deal with them. You're going to find ways to escape them. The bigger hordes in the game do have, like, those areas have the best loot.
Mm-hmm.
So they give you reason to go in there and risk it all.
Yeah, why shouldn't I just keep running away?
You'll have explosives and stuff like that that mm-hmm. you can use that, I mean, plant one next to 30 of these enemies. They're all going to go up, right?
Yeah.
So there is some spectacle to that and some fun to that. It's very empowering at times, but it is more of a survival experience where they want you to feel like these odds are always greater than you can handle, right? So that's kind of part of what makes it unique as well. Like, you never really do feel like you are this unstoppable being in this game. You're barely getting by.
Mm.
Your bike is getting damaged and you got to get fuel. It's barely getting by. That's kind of
there's
tone.
There's more of a survival feel
that,
to it. Yeah.
That Days Gone delivers. And I think it's going to be like a cult hit. It's not for everybody. If you start playing it and you don't like it within 30 to 40 minutes,
you're not going to like it.
You're not going to like it. It's going to get repetitive. What you experience
in
those.
I could use GameStop's new return policy.
That's right.
You had a 48-hour return policy at GameStop now.
Yeah,
I could buy it there and play it for a day or two.
If
figure out
like
if
it,
I don't like it, then it's
return.
It is what it is. I'll return it. Let's transition to World War Z, which got a higher review. Kyle Hilliard in your office gave it an 8.25 out of 10. What's different about this, it's another horde of zombies game, but this one's a little bit closer to Left 4 Dead, which many people remember fondly in that it is a cooperative you know, post-apocalyptic zombie horde shooter. Sometimes you're trying to kill them, and other times you're just trying to avoid them or block them or stop them from getting to you to meet your mission goals here. So it feels like it's more based on, like, set missions and rather than, you know, an open world, big, long narrative.
Right, and it's, there's six classes of characters, so you're kind of figuring out the best strategies for these certain scenarios. Every time I watch Kyle play it, I haven't played it myself, he was blowing him up. So whatever he says in that review,
that's what he said in the review.
He was blowing.
Okay, yeah, always killing the zombies, which is frankly more fun than just trying to block the zombies from getting to you.
But again, like the movie that had Brad Pitt in it, them crawling over each other is such a
Thelma and Louise. Kinda, you mean?
That is such a crazy thing that you look at and you're like, oh my gosh, like this is amazing in terms of how it's presented in technology wise and. You immediately feel overwhelmed, but you can hold your own in this game. More unlike Days Gone, where it's like, you better run. This one's like, well, let's see if you can handle this.
The swarms are even bigger in World War Z. It's just thousands and thousands of zombies piling over each other, making scaffolding out of each other.
Yep.
It's crazy. Your weapons in World War Z level up and become more powerful over time so that you can better adapt to, you know, the hordes over time. There's also competitive online PvP as well, if you want to play competitively. But I think it's built around cooperative play first and foremost.
You get an explosive crossbow.
Explicit crossbow?
Explosive.
Explosive crossbow.
What an explicit.
That's way cooler. That's what I want to hear. That'd be even better. So World War Z, if I had to pick one, I'm buying World War Z. It reviewed better.
It's
cooperative.
I would say if you're looking for a game to play on your own, go Days Gone. Give it a try.
Okay.
But if you like playing games with friends, try World War Z.
I want to spend a bunch of time on the forthcoming Lovecraftian game called The Sinking City next week. So we've only got about 4 minutes left here.
And I think it deserves
more time. And it doesn't come out for another couple months. So, but I want to preview it because I'm really excited, but I just don't think we have time for that today. So instead, I want to mention a couple other things. Number one, the current Humble Bundle, and as many listeners know, this is the Humble Bundle is a charity deal site where you can buy games and give money to charity, usually PC games. They're running a great digital board game sale right now. And I love board games. You love board games. If you love board games, you're interested in digital adaptations, you can get for pennies on the dollar. You can get games like Love Letter, Twilight Struggle, Ticket to Ride, Pandemic, Carcassonne, Mysterium. They're great deals. For a buck, you can get the digital versions of Gloom, which is originally designed here in the Twin Cities, Love Letters, and several others. I spent $9 to get, I think, 7 games and all the DLC. Yeah, it's crazy. So it's a good deal on Humble Bundle. I wanted to mention that to listeners. What do you make of the employee unrest that is sweeping through the industry right now, that based on the crazy hours and the grind, and many people are trying to unionize software developers, and I think in many cases, understandably so. What do you think about the greater scrutiny that's being waylaid for the treatment of employees in the video game industry?
Well, that's the thing. Like, it's not different than anything else in the world in terms of workplaces. You always hear stories of this, like people getting overworked and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I do like that the spotlight is being shined on it where it's gotten out of control, right? Like, so it's called crunch. And that's when developers are trying to get their demos ready or their, you know, the certain milestones, they call them, of games ready, where they're working around the clock to hit these demands of their publisher or the developer itself. And you're hearing them, you know, they're working 60, 70, up to 100 hour weeks, but there's no end to it. It's like sometimes, you know, every workplace might have a busy day where you got to come in on the weekend or something like that, but this is like every weekend it's happening. They're not getting any respite. It's just repetitive and people are burning out, obviously, and you know, something needs to be done about that. And I'm glad developers are coming forward when something is wrong and are crying foul. Is it different than everything else in the world? I don't think so. I think there's all sorts of places that are, you know,
I don't know. The stories here, I mean, I work hard during the football season, and it's 6 months, and it's a real grind for me. But it sounds like these people got it bad most of the time. And it could be, you know, the grinds can be like a year and a half of nights and weekends. And,
right.
You know, and, you know, I think just the culture is so embedded with all day long, all night, weekends, whatever it takes. And I understand as games get close to launch date and, you know, you've decided you're launching on August 1st. You've got marketing that's going to hit on August 1st. There are commercials running. There are ad campaigns. It has to launch on August 1st. People are going to work their ass off in July. I get that. Yeah. But it can't be all the time.
Yeah. And like I said, I'm glad they're coming forward saying this needs to change. It's not every development house, obviously.
Some are better than others.
Exactly. And, you know, they just need to get better at handling the workloads and, you know, taking care of their employees.
League of Legends studio Riot Games is in the news lately. Their employees filed a bunch of lawsuits against the company, and then they're mad that the company went to block the lawsuits. Well, of course they're going to. What'd they expect?
Yeah.
You can't file a lawsuit against your company and think that the company's going to just sit there and not defend itself. But
and Riot's one of the ones that has been brought up a lot.
Yeah, it may be really bad there. I'm not saying it's not justified, but these employees who thought that the company would just accept it are bonkers.
You got to hope things start getting better now.
Yeah, I do hope that is the case. In 30 seconds, the 3DS is now effectively dead. There are currently zero first-party titles and a total of 3 worldwide titles coming this year for the 3DS. What are you going to look back and remember about the 3DS?
It paved the way for the Switch.
It didn't even pave the way for the Switch.
That little lever, I never used it.
Never. Never. The whole thing was an albatross to begin with.
Yeah.
And misconceived on so many levels, and it was the handheld console nobody wanted and nobody asked for, and we got stuck with for 7 or 8 years.
They had some great games, though.
There were a handful
of great games. Nintendo always makes awesome first-party games, no matter what system it is.
And it ends there. Reiner, great job. Thanks. Joe, appreciate you keeping us on the air. Everybody will be back next week for more Video Games Weekly. Talk to you then. Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Fan.